The McDonald's All-American Games are where hype becomes legacy. These players are high school athletes today, but they'll be household names tomorrow. James Harden, Anthony Davis, Candace Parker, Breonna Stewart are all McDonald's All-American Game alumni. This is a big year. The games are back on for the first time since 2019 and returning to their many-time host city of Chicago, celebrating 45 years of legacy and commitment to high school basketball. Tune into the games on Tuesday, March 29th. The girls' game starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2, and the boys' game begins at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Catch the games live on March 29th and JamFest on March 28th, both at Wintrust Arena in Chicago. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster. And for more information, follow them on social at MCDAAG. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers. Thank you for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, the madness is here. Hope that phrase is not trademarked and I can't say it like the big game. But before we get to that, the NBA is on one. They're on something. They're on one. Did you know since March 5th, we've had 23 40-plus point games?
It's insane.
Since March 5th, we have seen a 40-plus point game in 10 of the last 12 days.
That is absurd.
We've had 8 50-plus point games since March 5th. That's 12 days since we're recording. Do you want to know the names on this illustrious list?
Toss out the names.
LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Jason Tatum. Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. LeBron again. Kevin Durant, Carl Anthony Towns, Kyrie again, and the one, the only, Sadiq Bey, a.k.a. Sadiq Trey.
A.k.a. Motor City Middleton. It's insane what he's been able to do. What's up?
Motor City Middleton?
Yeah.
Now, if I correct me if I'm wrong, there actually was a Motor City Middleton, and that Motor City Middleton was mid.
Wow. I don't know about that part. They did throw him in as a filler of the Brandon Jennings, Brandon Knight trade, if I remember correctly. And that worked out well for Milwaukee, I would say. One of the many players that have dropped 40 points in a game this season. Bringing it full circle.
Sadiq Bey losing his mind in the only NBA game because of the tournament starting is just on brand for something. It's just, shout out to Sadiq Trey. Also, shout out to the other big pun that I'm not going to say on here because I enjoy our clean rating, but that made me laugh.
You know what? Yeah. Can't say I was expecting that one either. It's fine.
It came out of nowhere. Yeah, it came out of nowhere, just like Evan Fournier calling Kyrie Irving the most skilled player of all time.
Do we want to talk about that?
No. I just hope Michael Jordan confronts him when they play Charlotte in 6 days. At Charlotte.
He might.
That's going to be a conversation in the back rooms. Somewhere.
Yeah, like, hey, young fella. I understand. However, ..
Where are your shoes at? At shoot around.
Yeah, like I don't know about that one. I will say, like, it is, like, it's always a show when Kyrie gets going, and the 60 ball. What did Orlando do to people? It's so weird because, like, they've actually been defending well in terms of, like, defensive rating since the All-Star break up until this week, where we get 60 from Kyrie and now we get 51 from Sadiq Bey. Also, Sadiq Bey just gave them buckets. Like, obviously the point total, but, like, he's flying off of staggers. He's running into trailer threes. He is bodying dudes, getting to the basket, getting to the line. Poor Franz Wagner. I don't even think he defended him poorly. It just didn't matter at a certain point. I think Sadiq had 30 in the first half. Like, it's the range of buckets is what made that performance hilarious. Shout out to him.
Yeah, he's giving everything he wanted. And yeah, happy tournament day to everyone who enjoys, celebrates. And also shout out to you, Nikias, because here's an interesting dynamic. I truly love the fact that you just love and embrace young players. Mm-hmm. You always find the good in them. You preach their playing time, their development, their empowerment. You also spent the first day of the tournament streaming NFL head coach on Twitch.
Yes. What's the problem? I was chilling until the UConn game. And in hindsight, I should have been watching basketball and then streaming during the UConn game. Because what the heck? What the heck? Here I am, like, all right, cool. RJ Cole about to go on the run. Take us to the promised land. 5 seed. We're going to the Final Four, whatever. Let's see what we got. Nothing. Nothing is what we had. Offense with 22 points in the first half. RJ couldn't get going. Nobody else could knock down shots.
12 seeds, man. 12 seeds and 9 seeds. Have a blast.
Yeah. I tell you who didn't have a blast. Me. I didn't have a blast. You know who else isn't having a blast? John Calipari. Going home. Who would have thunk?
I guess it's John Calinari right now.
That's kind of tough. Can I ask you a tournament / college question very quickly?
Sure.
Well, how much of Chet Holmgren have you seen this year?
Bits and pieces. Why?
Bits and pieces. Okay. I was going to say, like, just a general, where are you at on him? Because he seems to be pretty polarizing because he's obviously very good, but also he's very thin.
I tend to reframe all talk of young players till after their season is complete, just because the discourse leads to nonsense like this. And also, I'm not trying to have draft Twitter throw me over the top rope.
Fair enough.
For falling in love with the guy who hits 4 pull-ups in the tournament. It's going to happen over the next 72 hours.
Could have been you, RJ Cole. Could have been you. Actually, it was tournament day. I assume you had more fun with it than I did today. What were you watching today?
I was just watching a little bit of everything. It's a holiday for me. I enjoy this day more than anything. It's always fun to just, as I get older, become more musty with my takes on college basketball. But I try to just enjoy it. These kids are playing hard. The first thing that jumps out to me is, does anyone set screens anymore in college?
Oh, buddy.
And the answer was kind of no. Flex offense never going away. I love when the defense ramps up during these games. It's like, oh boy, they're taking it to a different level. Also super annoyed when a team like gets down by 7 and then decides all of a sudden to pick up their pace, or they decline and just keep playing like they're winning. It's a very weird dynamic. And it leads to those possessions where there's 20 seconds of not much and then a made contested jumper. And it's like, oh, okay. All right. Sweet. But no, it's the fun of March.
I see. If you're going to run flex, like, you have to hit the screens at the very least. Like, you have to create some sort of advantage, especially since the game is so condensed. Like, you would think the contact would become more
important. Now you just run the clock down for 18 seconds and run a pick and roll.
What is your experience like watching college basketball? This isn't something that I've asked you before. Because, like, we've had many episodes on this podcast, obviously on the NBA side, where you are berating the Knicks for how long it takes for them to get into their action. So, like, what is the 6 extra seconds on the shot clock and college offenses mostly not knowing what they're doing? Like, does that bother you, or you just kind of like, it just kind of comes with the territory?
It comes with the territory. As someone who also played college basketball, since, you know, no respect is ever put on my name. The biggest difference is you can tell the difference between the teams who really know and execute their sets and the teams that are just purely running the play because that's what they're supposed to do. That's the biggest takeaway. And you'll see the difference. You have a team like St. Peter's executing the heck out of everything. Then you have other teams just kind of running around for 15 seconds or so. And it's just like, you know, there's like, have a purpose with this. Like, you can, like, there's options here, clearly, but you're running the first three as if it's just, you know, practice. I appreciate the young folks. I think there's more opportunity for pace, more opportunity for movement. I think defense could be a little bit cleaner, but they're young. They're playing hard.
All right, I got you. Let's get to some not fun stuff. We got, 15 minutes of Steph, Clay, Dre together before somebody else got hurt. There was a loose ball in the second quarter of Warriors-Celtics, a defensive clinic for the Boston Celtics, in which Marcus Smart dies for a loose ball, also gets caught up on Stephen Curry's foot, and now Steph is out indefinitely. Hopes to be back for the postseason, but people weren't – that also seemed to be like a polarizing play. When you saw it, did you think anything of it? Did you feel like it was reckless? Did you feel like it was just hard play, unfortunate result? Like, where did you fall on the roll-up?
Well, first, I thought it's unfortunate for Steph and for the Warriors. When we're talking purely about the play, I didn't think it was a dirty play. I just thought it was unfortunate. Now, if you want to argue, was it necessary? Maybe we could have that conversation, but to just call it out as a dirty play, I don't see that. That was instinct. That was an instinctual play that he made. As soon as that ball looked like it was loose, he went for it. He made a read on the ball. He was the first one on the floor. Playing hard is a mindset, folks. And like, I don't know if we're having think pieces now about hustle plays, but if we're doing that, we just got to slow it down a little bit. That's part of the game. Once you truly embrace playing hard, you do things on instincts. You do it out of habit. And I'm saying that as someone who dove on the floor a lot. There's an art to it. Like, you give your body up and you understand your surroundings. Like I could see in Marcus Smart's eyes, the minute that ball looked like he'd get it, he just dove. And Steph also tried to get it, and unfortunately, Smart dove into him, rolled him up. That part stinks. I don't think Marcus Smart felt great about that. I don't think that's the outcome he wanted. He's just going to get the ball because that's what he does. Like, there's not a ton of thought process when it comes to the decision to dive on the floor. Like, I've dove on the floor. I've dove in the stands. I almost fell off the court in Minnesota trying to get a loose ball. They got the raised court. Theater. Almost bad. Dove into a scoreboard. Like, it just, you do it. But I don't know if it vibes with the times, but like, that was the thing. Coaches taught you, hey, be the first one on the floor. If you want to go get it, go get it. And also, better chance to not get hurt if you dive. Give it all out there instead of put your hands. So it stinks. It stinks for Steph. But I don't think Marcus Smart was being dirty. Did you feel differently? Did you view a different discourse than I did?
No, like, frankly, I thought the Smart made a dirty play by diving on it discourse was ridiculous. Like, I just didn't see dirty. I didn't see malice. He went for the ball and he got it. That was kind of it for me. If there was anything that made me raise my brow, it's the ensuing possession, in which the ball reaches Clay and Clay's going up for something and Marcus Smart is like leaping and there's like the leg flying and stuff. Like, I'm just like, okay, that's weird at the very least. But the Steph thing, I just didn't see. Like, no, like, that's unfortunate. And then even with the argument, I think you said like you could have the conversation about if it was necessary or not. I'm just like, for me, why would it be unnecessary? Not to you specifically, but like, why would that be viewed as unnecessary? Because in the first half, like, what, I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out.
The unnecessary part is probably just the sellout, because the ball wasn't all the way loose quite yet. It's like, yeah, he made a great read on the ball. He made a great beat. You could argue maybe he could have just tried to go get it or something. It's a flimsy one on my end because I don't see it, but I could see how maybe you understand, hey, maybe he tries to get some of his hands or something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
So I could reach there, but I don't know. Dirty isn't, it's too much for me.
Okay. I didn't get that one. And for the Warriors, like, what is your concern level with Steph basically getting back into rhythm as the playoff starts.
I have no concern with Steph getting back into rhythm. I just have concern with him being healthy, honestly. And the big part is the Warriors finally looked like they were coming on out of the other side of this. You get Draymond back. You got Klay going somewhat. Poole's going. Wiseman potentially coming back. You finally got your three together. You just recovered from losing a big piece.
Yes.
And navigating that and figuring some things out. And now you have to navigate without the piece. And that's the piece. So maybe there's opportunity for growth. Maybe this is a time that you can continue to get Jordan Poole going. And him and Klay can continue to work on some things, get some minutes with Draymond. You can see how that goes, stick to a lot of the rotations. You're going to have to find something without Curry. And so maybe that can translate going forward if you kind of put Poole in some of those roles, if your execution, your movement is that way, your defense gets stronger. There are pieces you can work on without Steph, and you can integrate when Steph comes back. The big piece is the timing of it. Not a lot of time. You're still fighting for position in the West, and you just need to make sure once the playoffs hit, Steph is good to go.
There we go. Like, I am intrigued to see what this means for Jordan Poole, because he's been on a run as of late. As you mentioned, the chemistry between him and Klay is going to be important. Like, I wonder how much Moses Moody we see moving forward. And, you know, Gary Payton II is on his way back. He's going to replicate what Steph does offensively. But if you have concerns about the offense, like, his event creation defensively might help him get into transition a little bit more, kind of alleviate some of those concerns. So where are we at right now? The Warriors are the third seed, pretty firmly the third seed, game behind Memphis. Do you think that's just kind of where they're going to end up at this point? Do you think they stay in third?
Yeah, unless they get hot, I would imagine. They stay in the third seed unless Memphis takes a dip, but we've been waiting on that dip for a minute this season. So I'd imagine they get three. Now it's going to be interesting. Do they see Denver or do they see Minnesota?
Yeah, that's getting interesting. Jamal Murray is practicing with Denver's G League affiliate. Michael Porter Jr. may be on the way back as well. Like, that would not be a fun first round for Golden State. To get Nikola Jokic, maybe get Murray and Porter, at least one of those two back for a postseason. Like, that's a lot.
The West is back. So the East has been very fun, but the West is back. There's not a fun first round series for anyone, in my opinion. Even Phoenix potentially has to deal with annoying young Wolves, super annoying Clippers, LeBron James, or CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram with nothing to lose.
Yeah, like, that ain't what you want for. Like, I guess on one hand, like, that's super annoying to deal with in the first round, but also it's kind of cool to be battle tested in the first round. Kind of go ahead and not the rust, but like a competitive first round series could be good for them, establishing a rhythm. Like, I would favor Phoenix in any of those series, but they all present unique challenges. The Clippers with their defense. The Wolves have their young talent. The Lakers have LeBron. Maybe Anthony Davis. Who knows? The Pelicans are fun, man.
Yeah, if anyone really wanted the 10 seed, things could get really interesting. Because let me tell you, Redacted is fed up. He's never going to tell us.
Yes, but he is.
This man, yes, is upset. He is.
The man nearly took this. Oh, man. He almost single-handedly ended the Rookie of the Year debate. That's crazy. Like, it's not much fun happening in crypto arena these days.
This man is furious.
It's starting to hit him. But he's getting his 30. That alleviates some of it.
Who's more mad right now? Redacted or Jerry West?
Add it to your bingo cards, people. The answer is yes. The answer is absolutely yes. I will just let you have that one. You can add that to the bingo card too. We just need a soundboard for some of this sometimes. That's a real answer.
That's good stuff. We are on track tonight, folks.
We are here. One last injury note before we move into the mailbag and talk about some younger players. John Collins is out indefinitely. He's already missed the last three games. He is out with a plantar fascia tear in his right foot. Also has damage to his right ring finger, per Shams Charania. I, as someone that has been frustrated with this Hawks team all year long, as someone that watched that Hawks-Hornets game on Wednesday, and specifically watched the end of that Hawks-Hornets game on Wednesday, I don't know how much more Atlanta I want to watch this season.
Oh, the hashtag is Mr. ABO. No.
It's so disappointing what's happened with this team. And like the Trae Young outbursts are cool. Like Trae's been very good this season. But like beyond that, well, he's been good. Like you've got some flashes from Onyeka Okongwu. Like Kevin Herter as a starter has been pretty good this season. But like it, I can't get past the defense. I mean, everyone else can, but I can't get past the defense. It's just been bad. And for the Hornets to be like, all right, you know what? We're just going to trap Trae. We're just going to blitz him. We're going to make everyone else do stuff. Like you would think with the offensive talent that Atlanta has, they'd be able to do something with that. Against Charlotte's defense, think about that for a moment. The Charlotte Hornets are saying, hey, we are giving you an advantage on purpose this time. And the Hawks had 100 points through the first 46 minutes of that game. And I was like, you know what? Like, if this is what it's going to be, like, I just give the Wizards the play-in spot, if that's what it's going to be. Like, let's get play-in Kristaps and Raul Neto. Like, for what? Why? Why do we need to see this? This is not where I thought I was going with this. I hope John Collins is okay. That's where this should have went. But
it's important in life to not suppress what you think and you feel. This is something I've learned over time. You need to be able to just let it out. You feel better?
A little bit.
Okay. I'm here for you, man. The hope John Collins gets better, number one. Mm-hmm. The thing about Atlanta is they've been such a, ooh, here come the Hawks, wait, where did they go type team all season long. But every time I watch them, I'm thinking, this is still not a team you really want to deal with in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. If only because they're Trae Young heavy, they're Trae Young and pick and roll heavy, and not just because we've seen it last year, we've seen it this year. If you don't have an answer, you now have a problem. And they have a comfort with that. And that's still like a sticky, like you got to deal with that in the play-in as a top seed. That's not ideal. Without Collins, I don't know how much punch there is. And so I don't know where you go. Like for me, instance, do you just say, you know what? Forget it. Let's start Bogdanovich. Keep Danilo off the bench and just see what happens. Or do you try and continue to balance it out? It's going to be tough for them. But the thing is, no one else wants the 10 seed in the East. Washington is 4.5 games back. The Knicks are 5 games back.
Yeah. Like it looks like they're going to be 10 by default. What a wild thing to say about a team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals last season.
I was told.
I was very wrong about this Hawks team. I tell you what. What a time. Talk about taking an L. To the Gwinnett County Hawks. It's fine.
Wow. You call them the Cobb County Hawks?
They are the Cobb County Hawks. There we go. They're with the Atlanta contention. It's fine.
Wait, I take that back. Atlanta's a great place.
Yeah. man. Thank you for the good times, Trae Young. We just need more people to step up. It's fine. Anyway, let's move into our mailbag. Again, if you have questions for us, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to them when we get to them. For today's episode, we are focusing on the rookies. So I sent out the bat signal. Y'all gave us some good stuff. Ready to dig in.
You sure did. I'm glad you put out that bat signal. The dunkers came in strong. What I'm going to need from you next time is you to send the bat password.
No, I may have to resend the password since you just refused to, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It is all right. It's all right. Anyway, first question is going to come from Kenny, who says, I have a question about Cade Cunningham. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of questions from certain sites and authors on Cade's ceiling as a number one scorer that I'm just not understanding. I understand the free throw concerns and the inconsistent jumper, but for someone who didn't have the offseason you need pre-rookie year and the growth he's shown, should there really be any doubts about his ability as a number one scoring option? I feel like he's comfortably going to be a three-level scorer. As always, the hashtag is Big Mad.
Oh, good stuff, Kenny. Seems like you're really ringing the doorbell on this one.
You got it. Do you want to take the Cade question first?
My question, and I hate to answer a question with a question, what does that mean? What does a number one scoring option mean? Was Mike Conley a number one scoring option in Memphis? Was Jeremy Grant a number one scoring option last year? Like, what's that mean, though? Like, that's where I'm stuck. If you say, I'm not sure Cade can be a number one scoring option, why not? What's it mean? Are you the number one scoring option if you handle the ball the most and have the highest usage? I wish he gave me more on that. Okay. In the ability to not compare Cade to a number one scorer, like calling him Dennis Smith Jr. at this point doesn't seem very... I just don't get it. I think Cade has shown an ability and a growth in his game this year. We've seen the straight line drives and how impressive those have been. We've seen the pace. We've seen the control. We've seen him attack and pick and roll and make the reads. We've seen him grow in that department. I don't think we've seen everything from him. I think he's got more pull-ups. I think he's going to get better reading and knowing when to drive in pick and roll, when to drive one-on-one. But he's shown that ability in flashes to do so. And if the shooting upticks, are we having this conversation? If he's clearly the ball handler for the whole season, healthy, are we having this conversation? If the team has more pieces that fit him a little bit more, are we having this conversation? I guess that's where my mind goes initially. I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Like, when watching Cade this year, like, I don't have many questions about his process. Like, we've talked about this on the show, and you just alluded to it. Like, the driving has gotten better. It feels like he has found his niche. Like, okay, I'm going to be a strength-based, timing-based driver. I'm going to chuck my shoulder. I'm going to chuck the elbow where the refs can't see it. I'm going to wrong foot some guys. I'm going to bully smaller guys. Like, I'm going to get to the rim in this way. I, too, have concerns about the free throws. Like, this is something that I asked you about earlier this year. Like, what is the path? Is he going to be willing to lean into some of the tricky stuff to draw fouls? Holding the ball out a little bit longer. More pump fakes. Like, what is that going to look like for him? Like, that's probably the biggest thing for me. Because I think him getting to the line consistently is going to be the last step. Like, he can get to his pull-up whenever he wants to. Against drop, he looks more comfortable. Forward momentum shots look better for him. He already has the sidestep going for him. He has the fading jumpers in the mid-range area. He can do all that stuff. So I'm with Kenny. Like, the three-level scoring chops, like, I think they're going to be there. The shot has to fall. And we've seen that fluctuate throughout this year. Started off terribly, had a hot streak December, January, cooled off a little bit. But, like, the ability to get to his spots, I don't really have many concerns about that anymore. It's now, are the shots going to fall? Can he get to the line? And I do think the shot's going to fall. And from there, it's like, okay, what are we talking about?
This feels like in like a numbers-based hooper or basketball player argument, and I'm confused by it. Because we've seen enough flashes from him in one-on-one isolation situations, whether it's switches to where he's shown the step back, he's shown the ability to get by and finish, hit you, spin, finish. Like, those are, what, number one option type things, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I wouldn't close the book on that because I don't think he's shown everything he can do. We haven't seen the complete progression of him. And what we've seen from when he started this season to now, pretty good player, right? We can agree on that. And we've seen him progress. I think we could both agree on that. So for me, like, development requires time. I think analysis of the development requires check marks. So you're looking for certain things to see, has this improved? What's different now? Is he comfortable against switches? Okay. He's not looking to move the ball. He's looking to attack. It's not just a step back. Now he's rejecting pick and roll. Switch big. Now I'm attacking you, pulling back. Drop coverage. I'm making the right reads. Like, there's more to it than just, did he come off the pick and roll and shoot? Ah, he did. Number one scoring option for sure.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And again, like, this is not a good context for him at all. Like, as you mentioned, all the different areas in which he's grown in this season, he's done all of this while getting a B or better level role man for the first time in like February. Like, his best shooter is Sadiq Bey, and Sadiq Bey could knock down shots for the first month and a half of the season. And so, like, Cade is answering questions from a process standpoint, for me at least. But he's answering those questions while also mostly operating in a phone booth. I don't see the long-term concerns. I don't have a reason to press any red buttons right now.
I think I would see this if maybe this was year three. We've seen Detroit reshape the roster a little bit. We've seen him purely handle the ball a lot, and it's just kind of the same issue, same problems. I would get that conversation then, but to have it now, it's kind of odd. I mean, he's sharing the court with mostly point guards, sometimes playing off ball, sometimes playing on ball. Sometimes you got to get Jeremy Grant involved. You got the plays for Sadiq Bey. It's just, there's variables here. So I'm just not all the way there as far as saying he can't be a number one scoring option. Because again, I don't know what that means. I was in Brooklyn. Was our number one scoring option Brooke Lopez or Joe Johnson? The answer was yes.
Add it to the bingo card, folks. See, now we got to add a spot. See, normally I'm the one that says yes. We here now. I have rubbed off on you.
Nah, just flipping the bits.
Ah, I respect it. Okay.
All right. Hi, hello.
That's enough. All right, next one's going to come from Zay, who says, not sure how much of Orlando you've watched recently, especially since Steve despises them, but there's been a pretty bad habit of icing Franz Wagner out of the game, even when he has it going. Like when he had 28 points against the Pacers, but never touched the ball down the stretch or in overtime. My questions would be, one, is sacrificing Franz's development so more offense can run through Jalen Suggs a good idea? And two, would Franz with high usage be more prevalent in the rookie of the year race instead of the distant number four, number five he seems to be now?
That's a good question. It's a good question, Zay. First off, I don't despise the Orlando Magic. Just the brand of basketball they're playing at the current moment sometimes can be unappealing. And it's jarring when you're like, hey, I'm going to just turn the Magic game on here real quick. And the first thing you see is 18 seconds of dribbling, followed by a late pick and roll that doesn't go anywhere, and then a pull-up shot in comparison to what I was watching before. But it's okay. We could talk about that on a different pod. Sacrificing Franz's development is an interesting concept because I don't know if Franz's development was supposed to go this way in the sense that a lot of what we saw with him on ball was with a lot of those guys out. And the question we had coming into the season was, hey, how are they going to make Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs work? And then those guys weren't really around. So, hey, Franz, do stuff. And boy, did he do stuff. And so it's a tricky piece as far as how do we get him going? When do we get him going? Because you have not only Anthony Suggs, you got Fultz coming back. You know, you have these lineups where it's not necessarily going to go right to Franz. And I think it goes to a larger point for me. Usage is important when it comes to development. And so in the long term as a player, you have to display a skill set and then display an ability to use that skill set in different roles. So I just don't think there's as much wiggle room for Franz as he had before to initiate offense, to push it in transition, to maybe get a pick and roll, ball comes back to him. You know, it feels like sometimes now it's comes off, play's not there, someone calls for the ball, it swings, he spaces, and that's it. So I'm interested to see how you feel. You know, is it worth it to have had the development knowing that maybe you couldn't sustain it with the personnel you have?
Okay. I got you. Like, when I first saw this question, like, I thought the framing was interesting to me, to where it's sacrificing his development. And, like, Franz has been good on ball. He's been much better on ball than I expected him to be, especially in year one. And I do think moving forward, it's worth exploring what he can do. But also, like, you know, to your point, like, this wasn't the expectation. Like, the questions I had, and again, I'm not a draft Nick, just seeing the little bit that I've seen before the year and in summer league, and then also talking to, listening to, reading people that are much smarter and deeper into this than I am. Like, the question around Franz was like, okay, not necessarily what is he going to do on ball, but like, hey, is he going to be a 6 or 7 3-point attempt a game guy off the ball, or is he going to pass it up? Pass up open looks, he's going to always look to connect the chain instead of taking matters into his own hands off the ball. So, like, I don't even feel like this is necessarily sacrificing his development. I think this is an opportunity for him to develop in a different area. Like, I think early on this season, he saw, like, no, he's going to be more aggressive. And then he got the on-ball reps. He's like, oh, wait, no, he's really aggressive. And so now that you're putting Jalen Suggs back into the mix, you need to figure out what he can do on ball. You just drafted him top five. You have Cole Anthony, you have Markelle Fultz back. Like, Cole's a good shooter, but we don't know if Jalen Suggs can shoot on the NBA level yet. I think he will be able to, but, like, we don't know that right now. And Fultz has not been a high-level NBA shooter. So, like, not only do those guys need touches, they need the ball in their hands because that's where they're going to be most effective versus being off the ball and spacing. Because then if you keep the ball in Franz's hands with those guys back, what does the development look like if the context is worse with worse spacing around them? It's important for him to navigate those tight windows. We can do it as a bonus. But, like, if you're saying, let's get the best out of him, like, we just spent the last few minutes talking about Cade's context. It's impressive that he's improved within that context, but ideally you want the floor spaced around him. You want good players around it. So, yeah, I think it is weird on nights that he clearly has it going, that they go away from him. Like, that shouldn't happen. I don't know how much of that is coaching, how much of that is the players, because, you know, not to call any of the guards selfish, but, like, Cole's an aggressive dude. Markelle Fultz is an aggressive dude. Jalen Suggs is a dog. And so, like, that's just going to take some time learning how to play off of each other. And with everyone missing time throughout this season, like, that's just going to be a chemistry deal. But moving forward, I want to see what the roster looks like, what the actual pecking order is. And from there, you kind of slot into different roles on ball.
Well, yeah, I think it's kind of a natural progression back to what they thought his role may have been to start. And now seeing, can he produce with the other players? And that's always an interesting point for young players is, yes, we know you can do this. And now, yes, you've shown us that you can do this, but this is who we are. So can you do that in these stretches, in these circumstances, in these scenarios? Can you still produce in that context? You know, what a guy like, and this is not even a comparison, but look at what a guy like Mikal Bridges does. Contextually, he has to get his moments off of other things. We don't know what he would look like if he was doing more somewhere else. But he has an ability to contribute. Okay, I know the ball swings to me. I got a quick decision. Drive, two dribbles, get to my fadeaway. Drive, kick, contributing. So for me, Franz's development was more of a bonus in the sense that now you see, oh, there's more than we thought. You know, you order the meal, two bags come out. You should be excited. You didn't expect to have two bags of food. Now you got to figure out how to eat it.
That's a fantastic comparison.
The hashtag is big analogy.
There we go.
Really just want a cookie. It's fine.
I respect that. All right, we have two questions from Doge Jesus, which unbelievable. Anyway, number one, why has Scottie Barnes looked better on offense than defense? He was labeled as a zero-level scorer who can defend all five positions, but it has been the opposite.
Who labeled him that?
I can't remember the exact name, but like I saw it.
Oh, it was really a thing?
Yeah, it was actually a thing. Granted, it was like one person that I saw use like zero-level scorer moniker.
Oh.
But zero? Like the scoring concerns were there in general. So like that's kind of the one that Raptor fans latch on to because it's so zero-level scorer, it's inflammatory.
Zero-level score is tough.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough to say. My first thought was maybe because it just wasn't expected. You know, maybe we didn't know that these were the kind of buckets he would get or that he would be this comfortable getting those type of buckets. And I think maybe people just didn't see the offensive part translating as quickly as it did. I think a lot of times when you have the reputation as a defender in college, people automatically slot you into 3-and-D. And then if you can't shoot, they just slot you into defense. ... And so maybe people just assumed, okay, he's going to defend. This team already has a role. They got Fred. They got Pascal. He'll probably just space, maybe be in the short corner, maybe set some screens every now and then. We'll see how that goes, but we know what he does defensively. So maybe that's where it came from because it's different. Like maybe they just – I don't know how many people could have seen this many post-ups for Scottie Barnes or this many elbow ISOs with the lineups they have, meshing this well with Pascal, where they're both going. That was a question we had earlier in the season. What's it look like when they're both together? And it looks, hey, you try and drive. Now I'll try and drive. And now we're both driving. Now defenses are having a tough time. So maybe they just didn't see that part coming. And now it's like, well, I didn't know. Because it's tough. Like those drives that he has been something else. You know, we talked earlier in the season about Scottie Barnes just laughing at the game plan and throwing his hands in the air and saying, I'm going to shoot. Well, now, hey, you drive. I'm just going to drive right to you, hit you, post you up, bump you, hook. Bucket.
Just hooking people to death, yeah.
Like, it just that's fine. That's fine. You want a short close? I'm right here with you. Now what are you going to do? I'm backing you down, especially if you're smaller. Shout out to Malik Monk.
Yikes. Scottie's been fun. Like, I love the pace that he plays with when he's in the post. Like he legitimately like walks dudes down on the block. I was like, bro, you're like 19. Like, where did you get this from?
19 playing like he's in the 70s. That's that old school game. I got you right here. I'm gonna get to my spot. What are you gonna do? I'm setting you up. The footwork, the patience. It's good stuff.
Beyond his years. So I would just say, on a very basic note, the offense probably looks ahead of the defense because defense is just hard in the NBA. Like, we've had some outlier good defenders in this rookie class, and we'll talk about them a little bit later. But generally, it takes some time for you to get used to the speed of the league, the physicality that you have to deal with, the rotations that you have to make, the speed in which you have to make them, the precision that you have to make. So, like, and we've talked about it on the pod, like, Scottie has looked pretty solid on the ball. Off the ball, it's been a bit of an adventure. And he's one of the rangiest and generally one of the smartest dudes in the class. And he's had some issues off ball. That's probably going to clean up. Like, I have faith in him doing so. But, like, that just kind of comes with the territory. But offensively, I echo your sentiments. Like I didn't see this coming this quickly. Like, the big question mark was the shot. And then the second question was like, okay, how often is he actually going to shoot? Because that was part of the thing at Florida State too. And in previous context, like, he was fine just sliding into like a point forward role. He was going to do everything else because he genuinely didn't care about scoring like that. And so I go back to the conversation that we had on, I think, the first rookie report, where we talked about Nick Nurse calling him out in the press conference, like, hey, no, shoot threes, keep shooting. You had four today, cool, shoot more. They're leaving you open, shoot. And there was like an immediate light switch that was flipped with him. And that aggression is maintained. And now we hit the all-star, you know, post-all-star break where he's averaging like 19 a night. And it's just like, wait a minute. He isn't shooting great from three. I think he's at 33% from three since the all-star break. But like, he's shooting them when he's open. He is driving with a purpose. He is posting dudes up. And now it's just like, okay, you add that to the playmaking that he already has. Like, the scoring is unlocking the half-court playmaking that he already came with. And so now he's just on the path to be a lethal offensively.
He's comfortable. He's comfortable making the plays offensively, whether it's scoring or passing. I think that has a big part to do with it as well. And that's been a development we've seen. Because I think one of the things we questioned earlier on in the season, what are the passings looking like? Does he have that kind of vision? And now that's not as significant. He's having more of an impact overall, hitting the glass. It's been good stuff. And then back to the point of the question, I just think your defense has to be pretty loud for people to think it's better than your offense, in my opinion. And I think the surprise of Barnes's offense might turn down some of the solid things he does defensively.
I think that's fair. Second question is, do you think Isaiah Jackson can be a good center in the league, or will he have problems keeping up with stronger centers?
I think it's going to be an interesting journey for him. I'm glad that he's getting this time to kind of room to grow a little bit and have this opportunity to get these reps. Strength and awareness are probably going to be the two key things for him, for me. When you watch the Pacers play, kid's got energy. He's bouncy, which is good. But he's going to have to learn how to contain it. Like, he is a ball of energy. If you ever watch the Pacers, just look at Isaiah Jackson and see how many times he stands still. And then tell me how many times you saw him stand still.
The inbound pass. Right before the jump ball.
He's like a toddler in a trampoline house. It's incredible. But he runs the floor hard. He's active. For me, the biggest things outside of just pure strength is just maybe having more of awareness, knowing the plays a little bit more, knowing how to screen and roll, knowing when to slip and when not to slip. Looking back at the game against Memphis, you have Isaiah Jackson at times, really good opportunities to set a solid screen, and he slipped,
flying,
which looked great. The issue was he's rolling right next to Steven Adams, who's in a drop. So there's no real impact because Adams continues in his drop. His man's right next to him, so Memphis can recover, and you just don't have the same juice that you should have. But knowing where to space and when to flash, that comes with time. As far as the strength against stronger centers, we're talking on the defensive end, knowing when to fight for position early and knowing when he needs to help to protect the rim and when he needs to stick with his guy. Because it feels like sometimes he sees penetration, he says, oh, let me go get one. Ball comes back out. Now his man seals him. Now he's at a deficit. And while post-ups may not be all the rage, there's still quite a few who will. Mm-hmm. And it's still effective if you give up that post position. It doesn't matter how high you could jump. If they've hit you first, you're in trouble. So just those kind of things. Learning not to overcommit on blocks or contests, I think that'll help him out. But he's definitely got some potential to fill the gap as far as rim roller, rim protector, which we know can and will get you paid in this league.
That it will. I'm with you. Like, I think discipline is going to be more of a thing than strength will. Like, he does need to get stronger. He's going to be a full-time five. But it's mostly discipline and positioning for him. He is one jumpy fella. He's a jumpy and a handsy fella. And so he gets a lot of dunks, a lot of offensive rebounds, lots of blocks. He also fouls quite a bit. That just kind of comes with the territory being a young big. And so I'm not super concerned. I think he's going to be a good center as he gets more discipline. Like, the strength doesn't really factor into if he's going to be good or not. I think he's going to be good. The strength will help him be better than good, combined with, like, the experience that he gets, getting more discipline, staying down on fakes and things like that. But I don't think the strength is going to prevent him from being good. It's going to be the mental stuff more than anything. All right, next one's going to come from McKeel. It says, between Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham, long-term, who do you think will be the better defender? Mobley is incredible on that end, but we've seen a foundation where Cunningham could be really good on that end of the floor. I can't get there with Cade being a better defender than Evan Mobley. But I think it's fair to take this opportunity to say, like, Cade is already a positive guy. At worst, he's a neutral defender already. And I don't think that side of his game should be slept on. Like, we've talked about, I feel like I've referenced prior pods like 20 times already. But one thing that we discussed early on was like, hey, you know, missed training camp and stuff. As a rookie, he's already nailing the off-ball stuff. He's already peeling over early at the nail. He's already making rotations. He's already closing out well. The closeouts are already very good for a rookie wing. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. And so on ball, like, can he deal with quicker guards? Not sure yet. There have been some instances where he's been matched up with these star-level wings and, like, they get into his chest a little bit. Like, Cade's a strong dude, but those are the moments where it's like, okay, there's Cade strong, and then there's, like, NBA wing that's been in the league for 4 or 5 seasons strong. And so you can move him a little bit there, but, like, I think that's going to come. I don't think he'll be better than Mobley, but I think he's going to be a darn good defender.
Yeah, you're very high on the Cade defensive bandwagon, planting your flag early on the island over there. And he has shown the right mindset, to your point, the activity on ball at times. I've been impressed by that. Obviously, the positive things on the weak side have shown. I don't mean to McKill the vibe here, but it's Mobley for me. I can't get past that. The shot blocking and rim protection we know about, the size and length we know about, but goodness gracious, he has potential and is showing flashes already. Like, he still has room to grow as a switch big. But some of the stuff he does weak side help-wise, at that size, with that skill, with that size, with that length, that's tough. He had to play against the Sixers the other night. He's on the weak side. Embiid pops to the elbow or rolls to the elbow, short roll. Mobley is there on the catch. The ball swings out. He recovers to Maxey in the corner, contains that penetration, and then calls a switch on a cut. Like, you're going to be athletically gifted with potential and IQ at this stage? Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't get there.
He is insane. And we talked about Isaiah Jackson, some of the strength concerns, and how jumpy he is and the foul concerns there. Mobley just doesn't have any of that. Like, also has some of the strength stuff, but, like, doesn't foul, swats a bunch of shots, can switch out. He's incredible on the defensive end.
Man had a block on Zubac that looked like a clothesline. But it was all ball and looked quietly kept. I know this isn't part of the question. That progression as far as footwork is going, positioning is going offensively, face up, hit you, spin, get to my spot, hook. That way that's been developing this year.
Intriguing 30 stuff. In the Clipper game.
Intriguing stuff.
A smooth 30 for that. All right. We're going to go back to Charlie, who says, I asked this question back in January, but now that we're much further along in the season, I was curious about your thoughts about it again. Who would be your picks for a second round rookie of the year and undrafted rookie of the year? Are there any changes from a few months ago?
Ooh, I like it. A nice callback, Charlie. Appreciate that question. Did you want to go first or how do you want to do this one?
Yeah, we can. Just for reference on that pod, we both had Herb Jones, Ayo Dosunmu, and Jeremiah Robinson Earl as our top three in the ballot for second round rookies. And our undrafted picks were, you had David Duke Jr. and I had Omer Yurtseven. So I could go, I guess I could go first. That's fine with me. Second round, I think it's still Herb. Like, he's, what's left to say about him, man? The defense is insane. The defense just is insane. Shown some stuff as a cutter. The shot has tailed off some, but there's some secondary playmaking chops there worth exploring. But anyway, Herb is one for me. Ayo Dosunmu still number two. I went Aaron Wiggins three instead of JRE. That would be my only change on the second round front. And then undrafted, I'm going Jose Alvarado instead of Yurt Seven.
Oh, you're off the Yurt Seven, eh?
The Heat are off the Yurt Seven, Zing.
I'm not going to say what I was going to say. It's fine. Second round, I went Herb, Io, and Kessler Edwards.
Okay.
Third for me, hat tip to Jericho Sims of late. Mm-hmm. For my undrafted rookie of the year, number three is Austin Reeves. I had Jose Alvarado down as number one, but he's number two for me. Trendon Watford.
All right, Portland goal.
Going to get that nod from me. That kid can play, man. I've enjoyed watching him play, and I really like that's part of the bummer. Like, I when they had Nurk and everything going, he was just fun. Like, he's got an activity about him. There's some juice there defensively as far as I can contain. I got length, I can help on the weak side, I can block, I could do a whole bunch of stuff. I like what he brings to the table, switching a little bit. He good stuff.
This does stuff. I respect it. Good call. All right, this one is going to come from Jeremy, who says, rank each guard defensively this season and from 3 years from now. And the guards he listed are Ayo Dosunmu, Davion Mitchell, and Jose Alvarado.
This is a very good, Jeremy, you are a dunker. It's a very good list you put together. I had Alvarado 3.
Okay.
Ayo 2, Davion Mitchell 1.
That's where you have him at now?
Now and later.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Now I would probably say Dosunmu, Mitchell, Alvarado. 3 years from now, I will go Mitchell, Dosunmu, Alvarado.
I'm going to let this go.
Oh. All right, fair enough. All right, since you briefly mentioned Jericho Sims, this next question is apt from Moha. What have you enjoyed most about this Knicks rookie class?
I liked Sims' energy. He plays with just a lot of activity, the strength he has. I think he's a hard worker, works hard on the glass. I think he has a skill set to find a role. I think he just needs more time and seasoning to really lock that in, but I like the activity. I like the fact that he can give them a different look and be at the level and pick and roll. I like his rolling ability. I wish the screening was a little bit more consistent. Like, I feel like sometimes the energy takes him out of position and he's getting to the roll too quick because he's got the size and the body to really be able to get some hits on folks. But I think he's solid. Drop defense, active, but I think he's going to have to work on his footwork and positioning to contain penetration more because he's not necessarily a true rim protector. So sometimes he's lunging up, and that opens up a window for a guard to turn a corner, finish over him, those kind of things. But I think he's shown a good level of activity and fun, and I think he fits what the Knicks are trying to do. As far as Grimes goes, I really just liked his fearlessness offensively. It feels like he's going to let it fly at any time he catches it. But the movement off ball, setting up guys, coming off screens, creating space in that way, that's been the fun part for me. And McBride just has some juice to him off the dribble that I've enjoyed watching. I don't know exactly how it fits in all the time. And defensively, I have a little bit of question marks. Activities there, but the rotations seem to be a little bit off. Closeouts sometimes gets himself in trouble there, but this should be a good time for them to let those three fly if they can.
Yeah, it's about that time. I think just looking at the class as a whole, like, I just love how energetic they are. And maybe that's just, I think part of that is probably accentuated a bit just because they're so starkly different from what you see from the starting unit for New York. Like, they just kind of play slow, grind it out. And once the bench comes in, period, like, it's just a different energy. But Jericho Sims, man, just watching him jump is a joy. He is an insane leaper. I'm with you. The screening has to get better. But, man, if he has a lane to rumble into, like, that's a lob. That is a lob. Like, the way We talked about it earlier. I was talking about the Nets defense. And one of the concerns I had was like, hey, the Knicks started like setting a whole bunch of bad picks on Andre Drummond and seeing how they recover from that. Like Jericho Sims got, I think, two lobs in the second quarter of that Knicks-Nets game on Sunday just off of that kind of action. But just watching him soar through the air is incredible. He's been fun. Quentin Grimes and especially Deuce McBride. I like watching them chase dudes over screens. The off-ball stuff, I'm with you, like, that does need to be cleaned up, but, like, watching Deuce navigate screens, watch Quentin Grimes get into Deuce jerseys, like, they care about defense. They really care. I appreciate that from young players, especially young guards. Like, it's fun to watch them get after it. So that's probably been my joy for him.
Well, they don't have a choice up there.
Yeah, that's true.
Try not to care about defense. See how quick you sit next to me.
Yeah. They're in the context for it. Like that. That's one positive context for him. Like you will get the defensive infrastructure there. All right. Next one comes from Isaiah. First question for him is, are there any rookies that you could see making a second year leap that the league / media may be down on currently?
That's an interesting question, mainly because so much of that second year leap has to do not just with the player growing, but the role they're put in and how that's going to go. So does Trey Mann qualify as someone that the media is down on? Because he looks like he should get more opportunity next year based on what he's done this year. You know, does James Bouknight count? He hasn't really played this year, so if they move some pieces and now he's actually a piece of it, is it really a second-year leap? You know, does Kuminga getting better and getting more time based on what he's shown this season count? Like, that's where I get stuck with this one because so much of it is fluid because some of these guys are going to take steps back because their teams just get better. Some of these guys are going to take steps forward because they get more of an opportunity to show what they can do. So for me, like, I would probably highlight some of those guys that I mentioned or like a Josh Primo. I would assume he may get more of a look, more of an opportunity based on what we've seen this year. Zaire Williams in Memphis, potentially, but it just depends. Like, do they go in that direction and continue to empower him and give him those minutes, or do they look different and now he's in a different role? So that's the toughest part for me as far as the second year leap goes, because a lot of this is not linear. You know, it's not like, hey, you did this in this year. Now you are going to do this because you know what I mean? There's no telling. This may be the best we see from some guys because of the position that they were in, the usage they got, the role they were asked to play. So, you know, does Oklahoma City get better and Josh Giddey doesn't do this again? Like, there's questions. So that's where I go. Who you got?
The low-hanging fruit answer for me is Jalen Suggs. Just because the year has been so uneven for him and he's still trying to figure things out offensively. Like, if you just look at his box score, field goal percentage is awful, 3-point percentage is not very good, turnovers, yada, yada, yada. But, like, the defensive foundation for him is there. He's shown solid playmaking chops. He's shown more comfort as a driver moving as the season's gone on. And so you give him a clean slate of health. You give him a full offseason. You figure out what the heck is going on with this roster, because there are going to be some changes to the roster this offseason. I would not be surprised to see like 13, 4, and 6 from him next year on solid splits. Probably still be like below league average true shooting or whatever you want to call it. But like, I think there's a big statistical boom waiting for him as the context improves. Bouknight, I'm glad you brought him up. Like, I think that's actually the answer because he has just had such a nondescript year on the court at the very least. I think, one, if he's still there next year, like, I think there's going to be an opportunity for him to step into more minutes because this has just not been the season anyone expected from him. On the Primo note, Isaiah, he did have another question about Josh Primo. He said, thoughts on Josh Primo and the type of player that he could be in a couple of years. I'm intrigued. Like, I've made the joke on Twitter before, like, he has the Kyrie aesthetic to him, wears number 11, has the mini fro, has the sleeve. Dribble style is kind of the same. Like, they're not the same player. But, like, that always cracks me up. But the pull-up chops are there. He can get downhill a little bit. Like, I want to hone in on him a little bit more just to get a better feel for the passing. I don't want to say he's really good when he isn't. But, like, I haven't seen, like, many missed reads in the games that I watched of him. And he competes defensively at the very least. Screen navigation can be better, but, like, the effort's there. Like, I think there's an interesting foundation to build off of. Like, I think he's going to be very good offensively.
I'm intrigued by him because we've seen flashes, whether it's on a drive, using that length and size to finish, being fearless as far as shooting, not afraid to put the ball on the floor, trying to get in the paint. So I think there's a foundation to build on. I would love to see him have more of an opportunity and see what that looks like playing time-wise. But this has been a good year for him development-wise. So, you know, I think that ability to put the ball on the floor should speak volumes and help him out. And it'll be interesting to see, does the shot improve to where, you know, if they drive and kick to him, he's not afraid. They throw it ahead to him in transition, he's not afraid. But, you know, is he going to predetermine his reads? Is he going to dribble his way into trouble? So those kind of things he's got to work out. But I think he's got a good base size-wise, length-wise, get a little stronger, get some more time, get some more awareness to really grow and develop off what he's done so far.
All right. And the last one is going to come from Dellen. This season, I've heard you, Steve, and many others in NBA media remark about several players from this year's class not only being great defensive rookies, but just plain old great pro-rated defenders in a way that stands out compared to previous years. Is this one of the greatest defensive draft classes you guys have ever seen? Are there some other draft classes that come to mind that compare?
You go ahead. This is your ministry. Bump these young players up.
Is this my... one, I would say, yes, this is one of the better defensive classes that I've seen. I guess we have to get the obligatory plug in here at some point. I tag teamed with Jackson Frank and Mark Schindler on a defensive piece at basketballnews.com. Check it out if you haven't already. But we consulted, kind of came to a consensus on the all-defensive teams and stuff. Like, we have Herb Jones and Evan Mobley on the all-defensive second team this year. Like, some of that is guys that have missed time, like, i.e. Draymond Green. Like, he would be an obvious one that would take up a first-team slot, which would bump someone down to a second-team slot, so maybe one of those guys don't make it. But it's also a testament to just how good those two guys have been as rookies, that they could even be considered for a team. It's insane. Those two, Ayo Dosunmu, Davion Mitchell, Jose Alvarado doing things. Like, there are so many rookies that are already making plus impact, period. Not just good for rookie stuff, period. Like, we talked about Scotty Barnes a little bit earlier. He's been good for a rookie overall this year. Like, off-ball stuff needs to be cleaned up stuff. But even then, he's taking on top-tier defensive assignments at this point. He's switching all over the place. We just talked about Cade. It's just a lot, man, this early on. It is insane. As far as classes that compare, like, this is the question that threw me off. That kind of throws me off, because is it how good they were as rookies or what the class ended up developing into?
I don't know. One of them had Hakeem and Michael Jordan, so.
Yeah, like, that's 84 would do it for sure. What other ones come to mind? Like, the 80 draft, maybe? Like,
one of them had Patrick Ewing, Joe Dumars, Charles Oakley, and Redacted.
And Redacted.
AC Green.
How does he get a Redacted?
Oh, he wasn't Redacted.
Oh, okay. I got you. Okay. He was him in addition to Redacted. I was like, what did AC Green do? Okay. I appreciate you coming with the true history here.
Hey, I'm here. 80s babies got to help. One of them had David Robinson and Scottie Pippen. And Horace Grant, if you're into that.
Should be. He's a good defender.
Trying to see if I can land on the one draft I'm looking for. Thrilling content here.
Hey, man, that's what we do.
I'll take it over the 89 draft. I'll tell you that much. And 90.
All right.
No offense, Derek Coleman. I know Gary Payton's there, but nope. Could we say top 10? Is that too strong? I'll go top 10. That's lukewarm. That's perfect temperature for Steve.
There we go. All right. We'll concede on a top 10 class. All right. Before we get out of here, I have some free throws for you.
Oh, my goodness. Take it off the bingo board, folks. Nekias Duncan, for the first time in 2022, has free throws for the folks. What you got?
I don't know if that's true, but I'll check the tape on that. Anyway, who do you have more faith in, Atlanta or Charlotte?
The bit would say yes. I'm going to go with Atlanta.
All right. Who do you have more faith in, Cleveland or Chicago?
Ooh, that's a good one. This Cleveland team keeps fighting. They don't. It doesn't care who's in there, who's out, injuries, not. I'm going to go Chicago purely on DeMar DeRozan.
Okay. Who do you have more faith in, Philadelphia or Boston?
Ooh, these are good. Boston has that defense. Mark Smart, Horford, active. Tatum and Brown cooking. Emay's coaching. I'm going to go Philly. I'm going to go Embiid Harden.
All right. Who do you have more faith in, Utah or Minnesota?
Ooh, that's a good Utah.
All right. Who do you have more faith in, the Lakers or the Spurs?
The Lakers.
All right. Tyler Hero or RJ Barrett?
Ooh, that is tough. Tyler Hero is cooking. RJ Barrett has taken a leap. I'm going to go Tyler Hero on consistency of this season alone.
All right. Pascal Siakam or Brandon Ingram?
Pascal, but it's close.
All right. Jason Tatum or Luka Doncic?
Give me Luka.
Okay. Bam or Cat?
Bam.
All right. Kyrie or Devin Booker?
Devin Booker.
All right. Wendell Carter Jr. or JV?
JV.
All right. Jakob Poeltl or Zubac?
Ooh. Poeltl.
Okay. Keldon Johnson or Jeremy Grant?
Jeremy Grant.
All right. Rank these young guards. Darius Garland, LaMelo Ball, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, De'Aaron Fox.
You said Garland, Shai,
LaMelo and Fox.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, a good list here. Shai at 4, Fox 3. Shai 4, LaMelo 3, Fox 2, Garland 1.
All right. Rank these guards / wings. Anthony Simons, Gary Trent Jr., Desmond Bane, Jordan Poole.
I see Nekias went to his bag. He's been saving these up. I like it. I like it. These four guards. That is tough. I'm going to go Simons 4, Gary Trent Jr. 3. Nope. Simons 4, Jordan Poole 3, Gary Trent Jr. 2, Desmond Bane 1.
All righty. Rank these playoff defenses. Boston, Miami, Golden State.
Yikes. I feel like Nekias is trying to get me to offend somebody.
Not at all.
There's no out here. Golden State has Draymond, but they also have some players that could be attacked. The Curry coverage and pick and roll is a question mark. I'm going to slide Golden State to 3. Boston has Marcus Smart. They have length, they have size, they have activity, they have Williams. Switchability is there, but also isn't there. I'm going to put them 2. I'm going to put Miami 1. That starting lineup alone, the way they rotate without even really thinking about it. Like, if you watch them play, ball goes to the corner, they just X out without even talking. The matchups, the luxury of Bam, Jimmy, PJ Tucker, and Kyle Lowry, and we still have zone. Yeah. Yeah, I feel comfortable there.
All right. More likely to make the finals, Boston or Memphis?
More likely to make the finals, Boston or Memphis? Memphis.
All right. That's all I got.
Trying to have me not walk down Beale Street.
What you mean?
Out of your mind. Nah, I Boston's path, as good as they are, is kind of tricky. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to beat what looks like Chicago, which I still maintain isn't going to be the most fun matchup. Because switch all you want, those pull-ups are coming. And then hypothetically, you then get Miami. Also not fun. Although Boston has had success against Miami. Because it feels like Miami's like, fine, we'll just switch. And Boston's like, thank you. We've been waiting for someone to just do that because we've been playing slow all year. And then if you surpass that, you now face Milwaukee. Memphis at least could get, hypothetically, Minnesota. Dubs. Gets tricky. But now they got a feelings to them. Then Phoenix. Yuck. You know, the path of these... can we turn injuries off this year? Please.
Would be nice.
These paths are set up for whoever makes it out to have truly earned it. Because I don't know who has an easy one.
I don't know if anyone has an easy one.
You got to hit somebody. So please turn injuries off, because the last thing I want to see is a deserving team make it to the finals and be like, oh, they, you know, the other team was hurt. Yeah, man, if we would have beat them if... That was Anthony Davis slaving.
I was ready to work in like a browbeat joke, but it's fine. All right. Before we close this out, we do have one comment to read.
Oh, wait. Before you get to the comment, I had a question for you.
What's up?
How good is like this version of Kyrie Irving to you? Like, how good is part-time Kyrie?
I tell you what, he is not. He is not the most skilled player in NBA history. Okay. However, he is very good.
He's very good?
He's very good.
Do you take him over regular Kyrie?
Sure, yeah. I'll take a rested Kyrie over the regular Kyrie, I guess.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendrick Perkins on March 15th, part-time Kyrie is hell on earth.
You know what? Fine, that's... I'll concede that one. It's cool.
Did you fill out a bracket?
I did not, no.
Oh, wow. Anti-bracket, man.
I don't think I'm anti-bracket, man. Like, I just... not my ministry this year.
Anti-braxer. All right.
Oh, good. All right. Shout out to NateBen16, who said, Dunker Spot is fantastic with 2 exclamation points. That's how you know he means it. Tune in every episode. We'll always hashtag embrace my bounce. Keep up the great work. Thank you. Comments like these allow us to have the podcast in which Steve makes jokes like that. So thank you for your support. Oh, goodness. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Leave us a 5-star review. Leave us a comment. We love the pleasantries here. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Charles Barkley is on an epic run of commercials right now.